There are a lot of changes coming to our managed language, and VB is not the exception. What are those changes, and what do they mean to you? That's this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. Welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Lucian, Dustin, and Anthony, all on the Visual Studio team and all working hand-in-hand with the Visual Basic product. All right, so let's talk about first, guys, who are you, so we can kind of get the lay of the land, and then let's just dive in and see what's coming. Lucian, who are you?
Hi, Jerry. Nice to be here. I'm Lucian Wyszyk. I've been at Microsoft for 10 years, been on VB for about 7 of those years. I do the language design side of VB.
What does that mean?
Well, every week we have a language design meeting. We sit down for 2 hours, and we have really heated debates about what should go into the next language. Like, I'll give you this weird example. We have this new question mark dot operator. You write customer question mark dot address. It's called the null conditional operator. So if customer happened to be nothing, you don't need to write if customer is not nothing, blah, blah, blah. So technical stuff. But we're sitting there thinking, should this be left associative or right associative? Now, the difference between these two, I'm not entirely clear on it. And I think a lot of us weren't. And we tried to go back to our computer science textbooks to have fights about it. We held a vote in public. We had fisticuffs. One of the people wrote on his office door, I voted left. Another one wrote, I voted right. And we have these pretty arcane debates about theoretical issues in language design that actually just impact the practical way you type and what is intuitive for audiences. Because when you're coding VB or C Sharp, none of you are thinking, oh, I'm a grammar expert. I know precisely what this language theory is. You're just thinking what feels natural. And we're just having these weird debates that impact directly on the day-to-day usability of what the language is.
Okay, wow, boy, there's a snapshot into the day of the life right there. If I were a fly on the wall, I wonder how many flies on the wall are sleeping through that meeting. Interesting.
That's an interesting question, actually. We're going to have a lot more flies on the wall because we're starting to record these sessions. We haven't yet recorded but starting this week or next week, they'll be recorded and published live. Not live, but published online.
Sounds like a lot of passion in that team. Nice. Now, Dustin, are you in those meetings?
I am in those meetings, though I typically do email in those meetings. People that are much smarter than I argue about what they're these various arcane arguments. My job is actually I focus on the IDE tooling side, so I do things like make IntelliSense work. Which has its own set of interesting problems around it that I get into. So often I'm there as trying to be a centering kind of force for good, saying, well, that sounds really great, but that's going to be really weird in the editor. IntelliSense isn't going to work at all, those sorts of things. So that's kind of my role.
So, Lucian, you're focusing on the language and the syntax, and Dustin, we've got you as the IDE guy. Anthony, what's your role here?
After the process of language design is sort of hammered out, and we've got a good idea for what the type of features that we're going to deliver, we actually have to code it in, and so my team actually owns the implementation part of the language and all of the actual testing, as well as the various places where that has to be exposed to other people inside of Visual Studio. So making sure that the new language features get in the hands of customers who are building ASP.NET webs. Sites, which use like an on-server compilation model, getting the compiler there or making sure it hooks up through CodeDOM correctly. My team also owns the new in this release. We own the code analysis APIs that are built directly on top of the compilers. When you use the new Roslyn features on top of the APIs, that's actually what I kind of work on and help design those, and that lights up the IDE, and that lights up the new diagnostic system that we've developed, and several other things. So I'm just kind of in sandwiched sort of in between Lucian's vision and Dustin's presentation.
So I imagine all of you guys from time to time have to think specifically, but as a whole, you guys don't think ASP.NET, WPF, or anything like that. You guys are thinking language and developer experience?
That's totally true. And if we start designing language features that are tied very specifically to one particular platform, we've kind of gone down the wrong track of language design.
I can see that. Yeah, especially as soon as change comes, it makes the language more more brittle maybe, or less relevant for sure. All right, so let's step back just a second. I can't imagine asking a better forum of people to answer this interesting question. And maybe, Anthony, maybe you want to take the first stab at this. And that is, developers listening right now, they understand that Microsoft has a series of managed language, but they've never really tried to put a pencil to paper and understand what a managed language means in the first place. Could you just summarize it for us in a quick little, here's what it is in the elevator?
A managed language?
Yeah.
A managed language is a language which runs under the governance of some execution environment. So, you know, in a way, Visual Basic 6 was even still kind of a managed language. It has its own runtime that deals with memory management. In the case of .NET, our management comes from the common language runtime. And the common language runtime governs our memory model, our threading model, our security model, and is what kind of protects us from buffer overflows and kind of all of the various security issues that kind of plagued us in the 90s. That's kind of what I think of when I think of managed development.
How do you do, Dustin? Pretty good?
I think you did pretty well, actually. Yeah, that's a much better answer than I would have given. I would have stuttered.
Lucian, I imagine in those meetings from time to time you'll come up with an idea, and Dustin is over there rolling his eyes because the compiler simply won't be able to do the great idea that you just dreamed of. And I know that we've now introduced Roslyn, and can you talk to us about what Roslyn means for the language?
Actually, I want Anthony to talk about what Roslyn means for the language, and Dustin, because they two are much closer connected to him.
Ah, brilliant. Anthony, tell us, what is Roslyn?
So the way I like to think of Roslyn is as the platform for the next decade or so of development in VB and C#. And we've had an opportunity in rewriting the compilers and the IDE to really rethink the entire architecture of the system and the compiler and the way that we did things before. So for example, when we did the implicit line continuation feature in Visual Basic 2010, that was a very expensive feature for us to do. There were a lot of assumptions that were built in the old compiler that it was a line-based language where the end of a line, a new line, was very, very significant. And there was this sort of state machine that had this assumption. We had to break that assumption in a lot of places, and we were very, very careful in the way that we did it. And it was even more expensive on the IDE because the IDE was, once again, kind of built on these same assumptions. I'm sure, you know, Dustin can attest to kind of the bug tail on that feature, and that we're happy that we did it because it added tremendous value and expressivity to customers around link queries and kind of ever increasing complexity and kind of expressions in the language, but it was very expensive. One thing that we cut from Visual Studio and Visual Basic 2010 was the ability to put comments on the end of a line. So what we found with Roslyn was that when we built the parser, we, you know, architected it or designed it differently, and that feature just worked accidentally out of the box. You know, we just discovered one day that comments at the end of implicit line continuation just worked, and we had a kind of one of those debates we were discussing earlier where we said, well, you know, we haven't officially adopted this into the language. Maybe we should put in code to make it not work again, and thankfully we decided to just leave it in there, and it's been in there for 4 years without anyone having to touch it or maintain it. Another place where, you know, Roslyn is capable of doing things that we couldn't do with the old compilers is around concurrency. You know, the old compilers were built heavily on mutation in native code, mutable data structures. Roslyn is built from the ground up with immutability in mind, and so it's much more practical to share data structures between the compiler and analyzers, or between the compiler and the IDE, which gives you some performance benefits, and it also allows you to share those same structures across multiple threads. So if you're running on big beefy hardware, you know, we finally have tooling which can take advantage of that hardware, whereas, you know, with the old system, you know, if you had 12 or 8 or whatever cores, it didn't matter because we were still only going to use one of them. So those are some of the exciting things, you know, both opening up new opportunities in language design, as well as being able to leverage hardware and then finally providing those services on top of through the API that gives you a richer, you know, IDE experience and an analysis experience and allows other teams and other people to, you know, invent things for our languages that we've not even thought of.
Yeah, that flexibility and capability of the compiler is one thing, right? That's sort of the dream of all of us, to be able to dream of whatever we want and it can be implemented without having to write everything back from scratch again. But I feel like a compiler, you know, the two things a compiler really needs is reliability and performance. How hard was it to say, okay, we're going to write a brand new compiler and somehow reach the level of performance and reliability of our original compiler, the classic, the legacy compiler, the old compiler?
So I think that they kind of go in hand with what we would discuss. Aside from being kind of a managed compiler and having, you know, the CLR protecting us from certain types of issues that we would have faced with the old C++ base code base, you know, we're not getting, you know, memory access violations anymore. Aside from that, being able to use the hardware in a smarter way, which includes multi-threading and concurrency, helps us be performant in ways that we couldn't have been performant before. Before, the bottleneck, you know, might have been on I/O or compiling methods one at a time, and now that's not quite the issue anymore. Now we're able to actually compile, I don't know, I wouldn't say all of your methods at the same time, but we're able to compile as many methods at the same time or as many files at the same time as you have cores available on your computer. And so then it becomes more of a problem of, you know, earning more performance benefits through being smarter about what you build and what you reuse. We have visions on kind of enabling some more incremental compilation scenarios that we're looking at.
So Roslyn has helped us deliver probably this gigantic backlog of language features that we wish we could have done, and now Roslyn has enabled that for us. But in all reality, this is the beginning, just the beginning, right? There are things we haven't dreamed of, and Roslyn's going to enable those as well when that day comes.
Absolutely. You know, this is, you know, Visual Studio 2015 to me is like Back to the Future 2. And I just, you know, I can't wait for people to see all the awesome stuff. And you go to the future and you can see it. And then we, you know, put up a to be continued sign. And then we go to the Old West.
Yeah, it's going to be neat. Everybody's driving a Ford Focus in the future. It's going to be great. Now, Dustin, a lot of people don't know, or maybe you should tell me, what does a compiler have to do with the developer experience other than just compiling my code?
Okay, so I want to set the record straight first. Roslyn is not just about the compilers, right? Roslyn is it's the code name for a big project that we did for the last 5 years that includes not just rewriting the compilers and rebuilding those from scratch, from the ground up, but also building the IDEs from scratch again as well, really building that on top of the compilers. Because what's cool about IDE space in general is that, you know, in a compiler, you're mostly concerned about correct code that's right, and making sure that gets compiled, or if it's not compiled, make sure you give the error user a sensible error, right? In the IDE, however, we really are only concerned with broken code. You know, as soon as you type dot, your program no longer compiles, but we need to make sense of it and give you the right information. And so for me, that's where the IDE is very, very interesting. And with this entire Roslyn project, building from the ground up and exposing APIs from the compiler that give us information about the source code, about the program that's being operated on, we made sure that those APIs work for the IDE. They work on broken code. So in the IDE space, I think that's the interesting thing. And what I really enjoy about it is making sure that I can give you the most sensible experience, the best developer experience, and I rely deeply upon the compiler being there to help me do it.
Now, we have two managed languages. We have three if you count F sharp. Mm-hmm. What's the developer experience
we
across
have four
those?
If you count...
What's the fourth one?
C++ CLI, right?
Well, of course, yeah. There you go. What's the developer experience across them? Is it all in parity?
It's not in parity. With the Roslyn project, we set out to rebuild both C# and Visual Basic. And we took a lot of time to think through, especially on the Visual Basic side, kind of why things are the way they are in the developer experience. Visual Basic has grown up kind of organically over the years, and in some cases, nobody remembered why things worked the way they did in the IDE. Like, why IntelliSense showed you this in this case, and that doesn't really make a lot of sense today. Why is it that when you press enter in IntelliSense with the completion list up in VB, does it insert a blank line in the editor for you? And in C# it doesn't do that. And we had to think through several, you know, kind of the nuances, several of these little nuances of how the IDE experience worked. And we spent a lot of time trying to unify things. So just the kind of the core editing experience, trying to unify things with C# and VB, but keep VB different where it made sense, and we could have principles about why it worked the way it did. But then also, we wanted to make sure that Visual Basic got a lot of love in this release with Roslyn, we didn't want to say, well, we're going to go write refactorings for C# and not do them for Visual Basic again. And it's 10 years ago, that's what happened. Visual Basic in Visual Studio 2005 shipped with no refactoring support in the box, and C# did. This time, we have complete parity in that space, right? We have parity between Visual Basic and C# as far as refactoring tools and those sorts of experiences. We made a significant number of changes to the IDE experience to make it better, richer, in line with C# and F#. You asked about all our manager languages. F# is a different animal. It wasn't built up. I mean, we didn't rebuild F#. F#'s already there, and so they have a very different IDE experience. They also have a very, very differently structured language, and so the same IDE experience might not necessarily work on the F# side as well. It's very, very different. So
right. Okay. All right, Luciano. We've seen it. We've seen that it can be compiled. We see that developers can actually write the language. What's the new, what's the fun, what's the great, what's the stuff that you're proud of? What's coming in Visual Basic 2015?
Good question, Jerry. I'm going to start by telling you just what makes me, puts a big grin on my face each time I sit down at the keyboard. You know, there comes this moment where initially you're familiar with the old version of Visual Studio and it's nice and you like it and you're thinking, hey, what's this new version about? But then you hit this tipping point where you start thinking, oh, I don't want to start using the old version again. I like the new version. It's got these things that just make me feel comfortable. The first one, this will sound really stupid and really tiny, but now Visual Projects show the References node in Solution Explorer. Okay, it was a tiny change for us to make. Actually, Anthony implemented it. Thank
no,
you.
No, he didn't.
Anthony.
I did.
No, he didn't.
You implemented.
No,
I
didn't.
I might have done it. I can't be sure.
Actually, Jerry did it.
But just because, like, you're managing NuGet references all the time, and you need to see that References node front and foremost, and it saves me an extra 10 seconds every time I click on it. I love that. Speaking of saving me time, faster compilation, 50% faster compilation, faster project load stuff. I just love these. Yeah, it makes it more fun, more crisp to be typing in it. Language features. The one I'm using all of the time is a new feature we call string interpolation, right? You know when you do console.writeline or string.format, you've got these curly brace zeros, curly brace one, curly brace two, all over the time, and you're thinking, wait, one, two, three, four, and you get finger smudges on your keyboard.
Don't have three of them if you only have two variables, because that'll just blow up on you, too. That's a tricky syntax. How's it changed?
So what you do now, right now, is if you want to do a string, you put dollar in front of it, so it's dollar quotation mark, and then you still have these curly braces inside, but you can put the expression right inside, so it's no more zero or one. You'd put, hello, my name is curly brace customer.name, something like that, and it just works.
It just works. That is beautiful. All right, I love it. Tell me something else. Keep rolling with me.
Let me tell you the next thing. Question mark dot. Okay, what's the number one exception that people get thrown in their code from buggy code? Null reference exception. Always. Professor Sir Tony Hoare, he kind of invented null references, and he calls it his billion-dollar mistake. That's how much he estimates world productivity is lost because of null reference exceptions. So the reason they happen is because people are supposed to write, if customer is not nothing, then look at customer address. Tedious code that is just such a pain to write that you're thinking, hey, I can be sneaky. Customer isn't going to be nothing here, so I'm just going to avoid the check. Turns out you were wrong. You get the null reference exception. So we made it easier, right? Customer question mark dot address.
So what's the name of that syntax?
Well, some of us call it the Elvis operator because if you twist it on its side, it looks like two eyes with a quiff of hair. Technical name, null conditional operator.
Null conditional operator. Got it. All right.
Okay, next thing. Imagine you've got your method. You want to do parameter validation. So you say, if parameter is nothing, then throw argument null exception or whatever, just to do parameter validation. And you have to put the name of that parameter in quotes. So, quotes X.
Right. Now I have a literal string inside.
Yeah.
Right.
Or, if you're doing XAML coding and you've got a dependency object, dependency property.register, you have to put the name of the property in quotes. And that is just a disaster, because then you're going to copy this chunk of code, paste it somewhere else in your project, and forget to rename the string. So yep. What we've introduced is called name of. You now write name of X, or name of age, or name of Y. And it sounds really stupid. All it does is the compiler internally figures out the quotes that you'd emit anyway. But instead of writing it in quotes, which was not subject to refactoring, because you're using the name of operator, it is subject.
That's beautiful. How often that clipboard inheritance has killed me, especially in that iNotify property change for XAML properties as well. So that's beautiful. All right, so now I can use name of, kind of like type of, right? But it's syntax feels or looks like type of, but it's bringing back just a string. Simple
exactly.
enough.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
I want you to ask Anthony about analyzers, the other best feature coming to VB users.
Anthony? I want you to ask Lucian about debugging.
Anthony, before we talk about debugging, tell me just a little bit about analyzers. What's it mean for a developer?
So analyzers, actually Dustin might have a little bit more context on this since he kind of was there from the sort of founding of it. But analyzers are taking the experiences that we've kind of bolted on to our languages in the past, like StyleCop, very popular tool for people who try to keep a consistent code style across their team. FXCop, another very popular tool for people trying to enforce language interoperability or best practices when designing class libraries. You know, these are great tools that have enhanced the C# or the VB ecosystem, but they've been bolted on.
It's analyzers too.
Yes. Analyzers, really the whole analyzer or diagnostic experience is taking that and really baking it in from the lowest levels to the highest levels. So being able to sort of extend the compiler by providing your own analysis that will flag certain things in your code as a violation of best practice or style guidelines or FXCop violations, having that be part of compilation, having that be something that can break your build if you, you know, set a warning as an error, and then having that same experience plumb through to the IDE so that you have the same rich integration with Visual Studio that you do for compiler errors. So Visual Basic, since 2012, I think, has had live squiggles, live errors and background compilation out of the box. So if it's a compiler error that we can detect, we'll tell you about it as you're typing the code. Since maybe 2005, if not sooner, we've had this great quick fix system where you can invoke a smart tag, now a light bulb that will help you fix that particular compile time error. Well, with Roslyn and the analyzer story, we've given that same first-class treatment to user diagnostics. And so now, instead of StyleCop just saying, hey, there's an extra space here, you should do about it, and you having to wait until you do a full rebuild, you'll see that exactly as you're typing the code immediately the same way you would with a compiler error. And instead of just saying, hey, there is a problem, it can also suggest a fix that can be provided that says, oh, I'll take that space out for you, and you can just keep on coding in a sort of fast and fluid way. So that's analyzers, and it's another one of those components that's built on top of the Roslyn APIs at the compiler and the workspaces layer. But it's opening up powerful opportunities for.
I could see that being a dev lead or an architect, making it so maybe I detect like the keyword go to, and I make sure every time anybody types go to, it's somehow. What does it do? It raises a flag or something like that?
It's a red squiggle, just like it would be, or a green squiggle if you configure it to be, a warning. And it's not just dev leads. Obviously, dev leads and senior developers are totally on board with that. On Roslyn, we use them for, best practices around threading and using the async await feature, but it's also library authors are another perfect example of people who can take advantage of this. So if you are somebody who's making a class library, a NuGet package or something, and you've observed over time that there are certain common pitfalls that people have where they're kind of falling off the rails, you can ship your API with a set of analyzers that are part of that NuGet package,
awesome.
Automatically plumbed into Visual Studio. So I'll give you our prime example. With the .NET framework, for years, it's been this sort of secret handshake that if you're implementing one of our serialization technologies, binary serialization, that you have to implement the interface iSerializable, you have to attach this attribute, the serializable attribute, and you have to define a constructor that has two parameters. It takes like an object and a serialization info or something. And the type system can enforce none of this. You know, the presence of the attribute doesn't tell you you need the interface. The presence of the interface doesn't say you need the attribute. The presence of either doesn't say you need the constructor. Well, now, with Roslyn and the analyzers, you know, there's actually a tool which can be shipped with the .NET framework with MS Core Lib that will actually flag it in your code as an error if you have implemented this interface or attached this attribute and not done the corresponding work on the constructor. And it'll give you an error right there as you're typing and say, hey, here's the problem. If you want, you can click a link. It'll take you to a page that explains it. Or you can just invoke the quick fix, and it'll go and it'll add the attribute there. It'll generate the constructor for you. So, you know, for both senior developers kind of trying to maintain their own house and developers and ISVs that are putting out these class libraries into the ecosystem, it's a powerful feature to help people be more productive.
So that's great. There'll be fewer and fewer common errors in my code. Probably all my errors will be much more esoteric now, so that'll be great. Harder to find for sure. Dustin, for a Visual Basic developer, has the debug experience gotten better?
Oh, yeah. I kind of wish Anthony would answer this. No, I'm just kidding. So the debugging experience for Visual Basic in this release, well, okay. Let me step back and say we've heard a lot of feedback about the debugging experience, and we've been hearing it for years. You know, we introduced Edit and Continue for VB.NET back in 2005. We did an okay job at the time, but then as language features have been added, we've gradually kind of let the Edit and Continue support kind of atrophy. Also, we've gotten this very highly voted user voice request, which was to allow us to use Lambda expressions in the debugger windows. I'm sitting there, you know, in the debugger, I'm looking at a watch, I've got a list in there, I just want to say dot where and pass a Lambda, or just put a link expression in there to say, you know, let me filter this and get a better view at the debug time, right?
Yeah.
And so for Visual Studio 2015, that's a huge area of investment for us. So I can tell you that, you know, that in today's builds and also in previous CTPs that we've released, Lambda expressions do work in the debugger windows, and query expressions and many other things also work. But also, Edit and Continue is getting a big refresh. And so today, you'll be able to, in very, very shortly, if not in the last CTP, be able to do things like, you know, add types. You know, you can already add private methods in Visual Basic, but being able to add other things, like things that you wouldn't expect to be able to do, like iterators or things that typically have been very... If you know how Edit and Continue works, these are every single one of these is a hard problem. And so we've taken the time to kind of walk through and get through those problems and sort out how we're going to do it. Another good example of something that's very difficult to do in Edit and Continue time, but it's working today, is being able to say... edit an async method, or things like that. Edit inside of a Lambda expression around, you know, we allowed you to edit around Lambda expressions, around link expressions, being able to edit inside those. That's work we're doing right now. So we're expecting Visual Studio 2015 to be really like a renaissance for this kind of edit and continue style debugging, where you kind of forget that, oh yeah, my program is running right now, but I'm still writing code. And we expect it to be very, very exciting, especially for Visual Basic developers who remember that support from years and years ago being really first class, and we're working to bring it first class again.
Wow, it's so easy to just assume that the things you're saying are so easy to implement, but it's like black magic, some of the things you're talking about.
It is super voodoo. It is crazy super black magic, yes.
Dark magic, human dark magic. Sacrifices.
Yeah. All right. But what else would you say, Anthony?
So one thing I think is kind of funny about this, you know, a while ago, Lucian wrote this great document for MSDN magazine, I think it was, where he's like, you know, my top 14, I think it was, features in Visual Basic 2015. I guess it was in Visual Basic 14. Anyway, he goes through and he gets this long list and he tries to compile this huge document that describes so much of the value that we're delivering for Visual Basic to customers. He talks about the new language features. He talks about some of the new enhancements in the IDE, a lot of which we've spoken about now. He talks about the debugging improvements. He talks about the performance improvements. And he's like, all right, I've got this thing, and it's fantastic. And, you know, we go out and we ship it, and it gets published. And I go into his office a couple days ago, and I was like, did we tell people about smart name resolution? He's like, no, we didn't. Like, smart name resolution, you know, it's another language feature that we added that was a response to common customer requests. But the point of it is that, you know, we've been working on the Roslyn project now for over 5 years. Development on this project started immediately as we were wrapping up Visual Studio 2010, and we've been working nonstop. You know, that was one of those features that was delivered sometime in that 5 years. There's been so much value added that it's impossible for us to actually keep it in our head. Even when we're trying to compile this list, I'm sure after today, we're all going to go back to our office and we say, oh yeah, I forgot that one thing that we added there. Because, you know, we've been very intentional about, you know, learning from what we've done in the past, about taking the best of both languages and making that available to each other. We've had a couple features that, you know, were accidentally added to C# when we said we'll keep them. But throughout the entire process, we've always tried to add, you know, small incremental value adds in the nooks and crannies and the corners of either the editing experience or the language or the tooling. And so I'm looking forward to all of the things that we've talked about, and I'm looking forward to all of the stuff that I've forgotten that we added already.
All right, Lucian, we've seen the compiler, we've seen the analyzers, we've seen the new developer experience, we see these new features. I'm a Visual Basic developer. I want to learn more about this. Where would you send me to become more educated on this?
You know, the January edition of MSDN Magazine has a list of the top new features in Visual Basic. Also, a really nice place to look at, go into Internet Browser and do a search for Roslyn GitHub. Now, that won't directly tell you about the end user things about Visual Basic, but it will tell you about how the sausage is made, what the team is actually doing. Of course, we have links to the list of new features, but there you'll be part of the discussion, looking at the new features that we're discussing, talking about bugs, filing bugs, putting in requests for what you want to see. This is going to be the major hub of activity for people who are interested in the language itself and how it goes forwards and what are the details of it?
I know it's pretty exciting to see how open everything is becoming, and you're talking about recording these meetings and really giving developers insight into what's going on. And it's a beautiful thing to know that languages aren't just a willy-nilly thing. People really do care about it. There's a lot of passion behind it. A lot of thought goes into it. And we really get a wonderful product as a result, right? It's not just something where you flip a coin and let's just go with it. And I think that's pretty cool. Listen, Anthony, Dustin, and Lucian, thanks, guys, for being on the show. These exciting changes in the compiler, these exciting changes in Visual Studio, and also the experience and all the features for Visual Basic developers as well. Guys, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.